You're listening to Work Tape, episode 141.
Welcome to another edition of the Work Tape podcast. It is your boy Money Mitchell, Isaac Rubin Grover.
Good day, friends.
So last week we alluded into this new Pharrell record that just dropped pretty much out of nowhere with really no promotion. There was really no hype to this at all. Like no singles, no buildup. Basically, it seems like Pharrell just decided to drop a bunch of music.
Was it kind of like a just for fun release?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, it's a volume one. So there may be more of this to come down the pipeline very soon, you know, because that's what everybody seems to be doing now, especially with like,
I noticed,
you know, Kanye and Ty Dolla Sign, you know, Vultures, you know, volume one, volume two, volume three, which we'll get to in a little bit here.
Didn't but Donda do the same thing, the Donda two?
Donda two, yeah. Yeah, it seems like, you know, just like music is becoming like movies in the sense where it's kind of like
the sequel.
Yeah, they're dropping, you know, an album. It's successful or whatever, and then they drop another album that has a very similar title that basically is carrying the torch of the previous album. The Metro Boomin albums just did that too, like with We Don't Trust You and We Still Don't Trust You.
Kind of reminds me of double albums.
In a way, yeah. In a way, it's almost like they are doing double albums and then they're just kind of separating them. Instead of having them just be on one release, they're going to separate them to a couple different releases, but that's neither here nor there. What is the topic of conversation is this Black Yacht Rock album. And I have some thoughts on it. I've listened to it a little bit more over the course of the last week. And my thoughts are pretty much that it's what you would expect from Pharrell production-wise. A lot of the songs have the signature four-count start that Pharrell is known for, that he popularized. The production is pretty slick, like in terms of the instrumentation. It's very clean. It's slick. You know, it's what you would, like I said, what you would expect from a Pharrell record in that aspect, that the production is going to be, you know, pretty top notch, even though, you know, some of his music with NERD was kind of more on the like quirky side. And not everybody always agrees with his production choices, which I don't either. I think that he's in his best when he's kind of in like the R&B kind of bag with kind of like those, you know, Michael Jackson off the wall style chords on the roads and, you know, just making some kind of like funky tracks. And his bridges are always pretty good. I've noticed as well, like they're interesting. And usually will build up pretty well. But back to this set of songs, I'm not even sure if I want to call it an album per se. You know, it's kind of like a volume one set of songs. The production is cool. What I just can't stand, though, is that it's Pharrell singing on all of these. And I'm going to be honest, Pharrell has not been the greatest singer of all time. Even in his prime, even when he accounted for 40% of like all music on the Billboard charts, which is insane to think about, that him and Chad Hugo almost accounted for like half of all of the Billboard radio music at a time between like, I think 2000 and like 2004 or something like that.
I'm curious though, do you think that that's okay that he's not the greatest singer, but he compensates for it in other ways like production and instrumentation?
Well, I think that's fine. I think that's definitely all right, you know, because the production of a lot of those Pharrell records are so good. But the issue that I have with this set of releases is that it's him singing every single song and it's auto-tuned to death.
Yes, it is auto-tuned to death. Yes, it is. You're right.
And that's kind of what I think. Unfortunately,
kind of spoils it, huh?
It kind of takes away from everything, because what I was thinking was that it was maybe going to be like a like a Calvin Harris situation, where when Calvin Harris dropped Funk Wave Bounces Volume 1 and 2, how he was handling all the production, but then he got different singers and rappers to go on each track. And that's kind of what I thought Pharrell was going to do here, but with just the kind of more like laid back yacht rock type of sound. And I was actually going to be like kind of excited for that because,
I mean, it makes it a technical Pharrell record.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, definitely. And I give him some form of like kudos for, you know, getting out there and like, even despite the fact of not being the all-time greatest singer, like at least putting the effort forward to try and do it. I just, like I said, I think if it would have been a situation where he would have had all of these tracks that were produced by him, but then just got different singers for each one, like I said, a la Calvin Harris or even Daft Punk on, you know, Random Access Memories, where it was a different singer. And Pharrell was on that record too, but Pharrell wasn't on every single song. And so I think that was the difference. And I feel like it could have, I think it could have hit better, I guess, just because, like I said, it's mostly just the auto tune that kind of kills it for me, because it kind of, it takes me completely out of the fact that, like, you know, even though you have what sounds like, in a lot of ways, actually, like yacht rock instrumentation, because actually the first time I heard it, I kind of thought, wow, this doesn't really sound like yacht rock at all. And then I listened to it more and I was kind of like, nah, you know, there's actually some elements.
I did hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what? Actually, yeah, there are some yacht rock elements here. The easygoing guitars, some of the chord changes are kind of Steely Dan-ish at times.
So they had a lot of like, it had some 70s guitar effects, a 70s pop / desert rock sound like Eagles in America. I heard that and I did hear Steely Dan for sure.
Yeah, the kind of Fleetwood Mac, you know, like that kind of like coastal.
On Drugs, Americana. This was in the record, yeah.
Yeah, it's the sound that people have been doing for a while now.
You know, I heard Flaming Lips and Tame Impala too in the psychedelic realm.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, I mean, like I said, the influences were cool. The influences were dope. And that's why, like, it kind of bothers me in a way. To me, it kind of got bogged down by, like, all this auto-tune. Mm. And I'm not sure if that was his way of basically distinguishing that, like, oh, like, this is what I mean in terms of, like, the title and whatnot, that it's going to have, you know, this, you know, very traditionally yacht rock production, but then I'm going to throw on this, you know, kind of more auto-tune vocal, like it's a Travis Scott record or something.
Right. I think there was quite a bit of, it was an attempt to genre bend. And personally, I kind of was cool with it because I love traditional yacht rock. You and I both do.
Yeah.
But I also do like when people break boundaries. Clearly there was R&B. It was easy listening. It was smooth, chill, spacey. Another band that I thought of was New Navy. It's an indie rock outfit. No one listens to them, but it reminds me of the early 2010s indie rock scene. So it did have a lot of that.
Yeah.
But I totally understand where you're coming from, because the auto-tune, while I think it would have been fine for like one or two tracks if he had done that just for stylistic purposes.
Yeah.
I think the fact that he kind of used it like a crutch, I almost think, well, not saying that he did use it like a crutch, but I think maybe like you're saying, it's been overused from track to track. I think that that makes it a bit more fatiguing than it needed to be. Because the high point was the instrumentation for sure, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I just think that like also it didn't fit the genre. It's one of the things where I'm just like, if every single song didn't have the auto-tuned vocals on it, like I would say like actually, yeah, like it would be a kind of summery type album. But no, like it kind of like brings it down for me a bit.
Hmm.
So that's kind of like just my take on it. And I don't know, maybe my opinion will change if I, you know, sit with it for a little while. But
out of 10, would you give it a high 5 or a low 6?
Yeah, probably a 5, honestly. Which, like I said, is a little bit of a bummer just because, you know, like I said, I really do like yacht rock a lot and was, you know, excited to hear, you know, a modern version of that. You know, I think even in some of the music that I try to do, I think
that it hits and it misses at the same time, because it does hit on some points for me. And I think the Black Yacht Rock was sort of a genre bending and a redefinition of what yacht rock could be.
Yeah.
So I kind of did think that was cool, but then it did seem like it was just like it's like a condiment, you know, when someone uses way too much of a condiment, it kind of ruins it. And I think that was like the auto-tune stuff like that. It almost felt to the point where you're like it's saturated with that one element and it kind of ruins everything else.
Yeah. Just like I said, it was just overdone a little bit in that.
But the concept was cool, I'm going
to
say.
Oh, no. And to be honest with you, I mean, like I said, just like to allude to the Vultures thing, it is a volume one.
Right.
So I kind of wonder if, you know, there's other installments of this that have, you know, features on it and whatnot. And that would be something that I would be very curious to figure out.
I agree.
And speaking of like Vultures 2 and this Pharrell record, both of them seem to be going more towards the direct-to-consumer route.
Which I love.
Yeah, so do I. I think that the direct-to-consumer sort of rise in a way. I mean, direct-to-consumer is a really interesting thing because on one hand, I feel like it's never left.
But it kind of fell out of fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Because with like streaming and iTunes and like all that stuff, well, especially iTunes and streaming, like there was a huge shift over, you know, purely based on like convenience in a big way. But I feel like streaming more than iTunes, because I feel like iTunes in a way, and I'm probably going to sound old by saying this, but like,
embrace it.
I think that iTunes actually got it right in a lot of ways, where it gave you the convenience of the digital, you know, ownership of music, but it was also much more favorable for the artists because in a way, you know, there was in a sense, I mean, not quite as much of the physical sale thing as, you know, when people were buying the physical copies of records, but it was closer.
The late aughts was a golden age of the pre-streaming era. It was great.
Yeah, it was much closer to that, like especially with the songs being like 129 each. And, you know, a lot of times the Apple commercials, you know, helped a lot. Like, I mean,
the silhouettes.
Yeah, the silhouettes. Yeah, exactly. That Viva La Vida song by Coldplay was already huge, but that commercial also made it that much bigger.
That's true.
Which, no surprise as to why that was like the most downloaded purchased song of 2008, you know, between the commercial and all the other stuff. And I mean, it is a good song too. It's just a very interesting song, but nevertheless, especially once Spotify and streaming really took over, that's when you really saw this kind of sea change and paradigm shift to where music continued to get like a bit devalued. Especially once people realized that Spotify and whatnot was paying, you know, only fractions of a penny. And so I like a lot of the initiatives from some pretty like major artists, you know, James Blake, Kanye West, and now Pharrell in a way, that they're going more of the direct to consumer route, because I think it'll be kind of something to even things out a little bit. And we've talked about even.biz. We've talked about Vault as well, which is the James Blake one. Although a lot of people actually kind of gave the Vault idea a little bit of pushback. Even actual music artists think that the Vault one isn't really going to work because it's, you know, mostly for like unreleased music. And they say that the subscription model may not like exactly work, especially when like Bandcamp has had something similar, and who knows like how much money they would actually make. And, you know, I do see that in a way where like Vault would work really well if you already have like a big following.
Yeah. Well established.
Yeah. And people are just like chomping at the bit to hear like your unreleased stuff. then I could see Vault being kind of useful. But like,
but we need something for the common man, the common woman, right?
Yeah. And if you're still on the come up, I don't think that like that's necessarily the best way to go about it. I mean, at this point, you're better off, I would say, selling, especially if you're producing, you're better off just selling your beats on like BeatStars or something, you know? Because I know that there's some producers who are actually making like a pretty good living just selling their stuff on BeatStars.
Yeah, some people are six-figure earners, but that's another thing in itself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just the scalability and online presence. But even .biz, I think, is one that I think actual like independent artists on the come up can actually use, because it's more of like a, well, it kind of has the iTunes model in the sense that you can buy the songs like digitally, but then you can a lot of times buy physical releases, buy merch. And, you know, there is kind of like a tier system in a way where you can get, depending on the tier that you buy, there could be, you know, priority access and stuff like that. So I actually think that even .biz is still one of the better ones, I'd say, for like the purposes of independent artists, I'd say. But I do like the idea of all of this, though. I do very much like how direct-to-consumer, I think, is really poising to make a big resurgence in a way. Just because, you know, we've seen how they do with the streaming and we're like, we're gonna want more, especially with the way that the technology is, we can do more now.
I think the streaming thing was really cool in the late aughts, the idea or the, you know, the concept of it. And then by the 2010s, Spotify became a household name.
Yeah.
That was kind of a cool like honeymoon phase, but it honestly wore off. Marriages do better than that, in my opinion, because even Spotify just kind of, I mean, it's cool for consumers. And yes, there's the argument of where you use Spotify, don't look at it like a direct to consumer replacement, look at it like a promotion thing, you know, or look at it as like a billboard for your stuff. But again, you know, people just pay this price, you know, what, $10, $13 a month for premium, and they get access to all this music, which I think from a consumer perspective, that's great. But it really, I don't know. I think we had it better as far as a model is concerned earlier, before Spotify became such a giant in the space. Because conceptually, I think the idea is really cool. But I think the reality is that it'd be nice to go back to some of the way things were when physical ruled. Because not everything physical in the physical realm back kind of like the 70s and 80s was perfect either. There have always been problems even during those times. But I think what we need to do is take the best from the past, you know, continue that or bring it back. And then anything from the past that was really bad. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, for artists, because they're the ones making the stuff, I think consumers are great, but they need to realize, you know, who it's kind of like the customer's always right. It's like, yeah, but at the expense of the employees having such a sucky time working.
Right.
You know, happy employees, happy customer, right? But if you make the customers happy at the expense of the employees' benefits or lack of benefits, then, I mean, that's not a good business model at all.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of where I think that the direct-to-consumer thing is really going to come in handy well. I mean, you've seen like some instances already. There's been cases of, you know, not super major label artists at all that have been doing really, really well on like this particular, you know, model of things. The biggest one I think is LaRussell, this rapper that's out of the Bay Area, I believe. And he uses this like even.biz thing pretty exclusively. And, you know, he's made like hundreds of thousands of dollars within, you know, months when, you know, make that equivalent money on streams would have taken him like forever, basically. And I think he actually did, which was cool. He did the direct to consumer thing, but he still also allowed his music to be on streaming services, though, you know, for the purpose of discovery, playlisting, you know, getting to a bigger audience in that respect. And I think that's kind of, to me anyway, where the best of both is going to be, because I think the idea of going direct to consumer, especially for just like the monetary thing, is great, because it's just, like I said, been shown numerous times again now that the people who went direct to consumer are doing way better, like financially, than those who didn't.
Yep.
But I do think that like it doesn't have to be like a this or that kind of thing. I think that you can do the direct to consumer and like physical type of release route where like you give early access to people who go with the direct to consumer or the even.biz or whatever you use, but then still have the music up on streaming for, like I said, the like algorithmic playlisting type of stuff.
So it's, to a degree, have your cake and eat it as well.
Yeah, I think we can, like right now, just because there's nothing that's like explicitly in Spotify's like, you know, rules or terms of service that you can't do that, especially because the whole independent thing, you can go, you don't even have to go through a major label anymore to get distribution. You can go,
of course,
you can go through TuneCore or DistroKid or Lander, or, you know, there's so many that you can pick now where you can get all of your music on the streaming services. And as long as you just keep paying like the distribution service, which I think it's like $20 a year, and you can upload as many tracks as you want. There's nothing in Spotify's, you know, lettering that says, oh, you can only have music on streaming, or you can only have direct to consumer releases.
Yeah. Let's not give them ideas. That would suck.
Well, no, that'd be terrible.
That would suck.
But I am just saying, though, like for the purposes of here and now, and I think probably for the near term future as well, just because I think if they were to instate something like that, it would be kind of suicide in a way.
Oh, yeah. A lot of backlash would ensue.
So I don't think that's going to happen.
Commify.
They already have enough bad press. I don't think they need more bad press.
No.
So I think that there is a way, like, for, and actually, to be honest, I think independents and majors can do it. I think it's going to be more for independents, because there may be actual clauses in like major artist deals that say that you can't, you know, do that or whatever. But that's for the majors. And to be honest, like the majors, not to say that they don't need it, but they don't need it as much. Mm-mm. Because especially if you're in, you know, a Drake situation, if you're in a Taylor Swift or Weeknd situation where your music is going to get hundreds of millions, if not billions of streams, just based on your name alone, you don't really need that in terms of the direct to consumer. Obviously, if they want to, they can, depending on their clause and their agreement in the contracts, but they don't have to do it. What I do think, though, would be important for them is if that bill gets passed that will mandate a cent per stream across all streaming services, which I think that bill was introduced this year, and I haven't heard much of anything about it since. So I don't know if they're still crafting up the details of it.
You know, if that passes, I can see it happening. They're just going to raise the price of streaming.
Well, of course they are. I think they've already figured out exactly how much they're going to raise the subscription by. And I think it was like $3 or something.
Which, again, you know, passed on a consumer, which is fine. I'm just saying it's like commonsensically, we know it's going to happen, but a lot of people assume that it's not going to happen, which is why I mention it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I think that's the area where people can't exactly have cake and eat it too.
Yeah. They're living in fantasy land. Like, what did you think was going to happen? So...
Right. It's kind of the same people who push for minimum wage to be higher and they don't expect the rest of everything else to follow suit. And then
you mean like what's happening in our state right now?
Yeah. And then, you know, they get upset because they're like, oh, I should be, you know, they finally gave me that raise. I should mm-hmm. be making more money. And then they don't realize that, like, well, there's a correlation effect that where everything else is going to is going to go up. So you're not actually really making that much more.
Well, you get laid off. That's what happens. You make this much, but then you get laid off. And then your other buddy who, you know, is going to keep the 20 an hour.
Yeah.
But everyone else gets thrown off the team. So.
Yeah. I mean, career talks with the Work Tape podcast, putting the Work and Work Tape podcast there. Anyway, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see if this legislation passes, because actually I think if the legislation
it'll passed, be good for creatives. Yes.
Oh, for sure. And I think that it will be a better situation because people are still going to pay it. Like, even if it does raise $2 or $3, yeah, they're going to lose some customers because they're going to think like, you know, oh, that's too much. But let's be honest, like, they're not going to lose that much.
No.
In terms of the customer base.
They'll make it back.
Right. And speaking of streaming things, I just read some recent news. T-Swift's music might be going back to TikTok despite the UMG licensing dispute.
Yeah, because we talked about that some weeks back.
Yeah, so it'll be very interesting to see exactly if there's a lot of other music that may be returning to the platform because, I mean, to get Taylor back on there is huge. That was kind of one of the big things, like when this whole UMG thing started going down, was that, you know, people said, oh, it's Taylor Swift's label or whatever. And it's like, wait a minute, there's all these other artists too on there. There's like The Weeknd, Ariana Grande, like all of these other artists, like what, they don't mean nothing.
Right. Yay for Swift talk, I suppose.
Yeah. But I'll have to continue to look at the news on that. But I do know that Taylor is also coming out with an album, I think, this next week on the 19th. She's dropping the Tortured Poets Department or something.
Dude, she's on a roll with the releases.
I mean, most of them are just the reworks of her existing stuff, but this is an entire...
I still think it counts.
Well, no, of course it does. But I mean, this is different too, because it's an entirely new release. Like it's like a Midnight's. It's entirely new original songs.
Of course.
And it'll be interesting, like with that title and kind of with the black and white color scheme of the album cover, I'm like, is it going to be kind of a depressing record? Like from the sounds of things, like, cause it may be more in tune with like the Evermore Folklore, which were kind of more like moody records. Which I enjoyed those, actually.
We're cut from the cloth of Coldplay, so we like that stuff.
Yeah, I liked both of those. I thought that both of those were good. But we'll have to get into that a little bit more in the next episode. So stay tuned for that. This has been the Work Tape Podcast. Money Mitchell, Isaac Rubin Grover. Be good to one another out there. Peace.
Take it easy, y'all. Peace.